No writers were harmed in the production of this podcast.
From the Writer's Dossier podcast studio, writer's room, and occasional speakeasy, this is the Dossier Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Circle. Today in the interrogation chair, it's T.D. Donnelly, where he talks about his debut novel, Year of the Rabbit. He explains what it's like writing books after 30 years as a Hollywood scriptwriter, and he survives our rapid-fire questions where we discover even more about him. You learned about him first in his unredacted dossier. Now, we finally have him in person where we have ways of making him talk. Welcome to the Dossier Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dossier Podcast. I'm here today as your host, Jeff Circle, and special guests. Big deal tonight. T.D. Donnelly, author of a fantastic series that's out right now. And I just want to get right to it, Tom. First of all, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
It's good to see you. I'm just going to jump into these questions here because people don't have a lot of time. We're going to keep this short. So let me ask you, how much truth is there to the rumor that the reason you're writing books now instead of screenplays is because you've become an insufferable aristocratic Hollywood prima donna?
All right. So you've been talking to Mel Gibson. It's not true. I mean, listen, individually, all of those things you said are true, but collectively, it is not true. And if you think that those three things mean that I would not be hired in Hollywood, you got another thing coming.
No problems being hired in Hollywood there, Tom Donnelly, folks. Okay, well, thanks for playing along. Serious question. Is the true reason you're no longer allowed at four-star Hollywood restaurants because you threw a Gordon Ramsay-level fit when your sparkling water was served at 61 degrees instead of room temperature like you like it? I mean, we heard it was like they served you two-day-old gas station sushi and you just flipped out.
Look, I want what I want. If I wanted a terrine of foie gras, I could make it at home, okay? When I go to a restaurant, it's got to be perfect, all right? That's just the way it's got to be. Hilarious story. At Author Nation, I took Kyla Stone, Doug Pratt, Franklin Horton out to their very first molecular gastronomy experience in Las Vegas, where they're making things like you're looking at the plate and you have no idea. Is it a vegetable? Is it a meat? Is like, what the hell am I eating? And I'm talking them through the whole process. So it's so weird that you ask
that question. The tiny food on the big plate and you're like, what is this?
It's the tiny food on the big plate. And like we had the Adrian Ferra of olives, which are these, it looks like a big green bubble and you put the bubble in your mouth and you pop it with your tongue on the top of your mouth. And suddenly you're eating an olive, like the best olive you ever had in your life, because it's molecularly deconstructed and then reconstructed in this new format. Those people went on a whirlwind of an experience with me. It was like the trippiest thing for all. I love showing new people that kind of stuff because it's like Willy Wonka, but not just for candy, for food. It's Willy Wonka type experience. So
that's a great comparison.
I would never treat servers badly. I love servers. Most of my actor friends have been servers or are servers.
As have I. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for playing along. Seriously, this time we're here because of your debut novel, The Year of the Rabbit. It came out last year and it's eligible for an Anthony Award nomination. So for all of our BoucherCon listeners out there with ballots still yet to fill out, why should they be nominating your book this year?
Well, listen, so first things first, it's gotten an amazing reception so far. It has 120-something reviews on Amazon right now, and it's got a 4.9 review average, which I don't know if you know about that, but that is the top 0.1% of books on Amazon as far as review average goes. People are just absolutely loving it, and like I'm kind of blown away by the reaction that it's been getting right there. Listen, I've been a professional writer for 30 years, so it's kind of a weird thing to be in a category of first novel, right? You know, like, oh, it's you're a nominee for a first novel. I've been writing, you know, with no day job for 30 years now, and so at on the one hand, tremendously inexperienced, my first novel. On the other hand, 30 years of writing in the trenches of Hollywood, I would expect that it would be good, but the reception that I've gotten so far has been absolutely extraordinary. I've been so welcomed by not just readers, but also other writers, other novelists, and folks like you, Jeff. I've been really blessed.
And storytelling too. I mean, we'll get into this a little bit more down the road, but either way, you're telling a story. It's just in a different medium.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, people say things about one medium or another. Novel writing is a joy. I mean, I all of the restrictions, all of the things that I can't do in screenwriting, suddenly I can describe a character's internal state. I can get in their head. I can explain their emotions without having to craft this like perfect line of dialogue that gets it out there. It's amazing.
Well, that's a perfect lead in to what I was going to say next. And you revealed in your dossier last year, it's available at thewritersdossier.com. They can look it up. There are a lot of restrictions in writing a Hollywood screenplay, but writing a novel is what you called a freeing experience. And you just about said the same thing right now. So, folks, that's how honest this guy is. Now, the Year of the Rabbit is out, and you have something else coming out this summer. What's the ratio of novels to screenplays in your future? I know you can't talk about everything you've got going on because of NDAs and everything, but all these screenplays, 30 years of writing, debut novel, you've got another book coming out. So what are you focusing on most?
Well, I mean, it's a really good question. And the answer is, I don't know. I mean, the reason that the novel came out last year was because there was a Hollywood writer strike. And for 6 months, all the producers and the multi-billion dollar corporations that are the movie business told me, hey, you can't write screenplays. But they didn't tell me I couldn't write a novel. So I did. And I've had so much fun with that experience. Now, a year after the strike, business is down like 40%. There's been a 40% drop in work in Hollywood. So there's a lot of people. I'm one of the fortunate ones that actually has had a couple jobs since business picked back up again. But it's kind of scary over here on the Hollywood side of things. There's a lot of people that are losing work, a lot of people that are having to leave the business and do other things. I still love it. I would love, for as long as they will let me, for as long as I'm selling projects, I would love to have a foot in both worlds. And my goal is to write at least a novel a year, if not two or even three a year, in addition to the screenwriting, because I think they feed each other. Like, when you've been writing as long as I have, it's always great to tackle a new challenge. One of the great things about writing is that everything is a new challenge. Nothing is ever exactly the same, right? I've never written a project that I could bring more than 80% of what I know into it. There's always at least 20% of new discovery that I have in that particular experience. Like, oh, wow, that's a character that I've never written before. Wow, the plot is going in a direction that I've never quite gone before. Oh, wow, this is an ending. I've never seen this ending, let alone written this ending before. It keeps me young, it keeps me fresh, and I love it. And the fact that novels are such a different experience, I'm like a kid in a candy store again, and I love it.
Well, we love it too. And people should know, folks, remember the name T.D. Donnelly. You've worked on some big budget movies like Marvel's Doctor Strange, Clive Cussler's Sahara with Matthew McConaughey, Conan the Barbarian, and many others. So,
Winding Road Stories is a traditional and innovative publishing company located in New York City. It was created by writers for writers, and I can tell you that they really have an author-centric approach in dealing with their creators. They don't just take your manuscript and disappear. They work with you to make it the best it can be. I met with Winding Road's founding editor, Michael Dolan, a few years ago, and we've been in touch ever since. He's the kind of guy I can text when I have a question about anything, and he always responds with wisdom and insights that I often lack. Winding Road Stories believes that a good story deserves to be shared, and they're looking for stories from all genres. They want to help develop your passion projects, so look them up. Find them on social media everywhere and at WindingRoadStories.com.
Big payday aside, what's more appealing? Working with the A-list Hollywood elite, the
best of the Bees or the up and coming new actors just starting out?
You know what? It's not even in that category. It's like person to person. Individual experiences are all different. Like they say, you never meet your heroes. And in some cases, that is absolutely true. In some cases, couldn't be farther from the truth. I did two projects with Jackie Chan in the last 3 years. And that guy is a legend in so many different ways. And meeting him, I was really, really worried. I was like, oh God, is he just going to shatter all of my hopes and dreams for him? He was the nicest, most collaborative, sweetest. Like I'm pitching him in the room, the story that we're writing for him and with him. And he's up out of his seat and he is literally crafting with his body moments and scenes and interactions that he wants to put into the story. And it was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he's like 70 years old. He's like an old guy and he has the physicality of a 20-year-old. It was amazing to see him coming up with things and the way his process, which is kinetic, he's like a completely kinetic learner and he's crafting his character through movement. And it was absolutely astonishing. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, except to say that at the top of their game, some of these people, you know, and I put McConaughey into that category as well, are generous because they know they're comfortable in what they're doing. They know they love what they're doing and they want to feed you everything they can so that you can give them the best that you can do. And that's the best experience in the world.
All right. Okay, so we haven't talked about Malcolm Chaucer. Tell us about Malcolm Chaucer. And I mean, I'm going off script here. I don't ask typical questions. How did you come up with, what's your process? All that stuff. But after 30, are you a pantser or a plotter? After 30 years of writing and coming up with stories and building scenarios and doing dialogue and setting scenes, all that stuff for screenplays. Has it all come to this? Is this the guy you wanted to create? Is this the guy you always wanted to write? All of that you've written over the last 30 years, is this just the beginning for you? Or is he the culmination, everything you've seen and done and always wanted to write?
Well, okay, so I'm going to answer this in two ways. First, I'm going to say that when you're a screenwriter in Hollywood, you are writing project after project after project that get a blinking green light and then get a director attached and then get a producer that comes on and everything is looking great. And then suddenly somebody in the studio leaves the studio, a new person comes in and that project's dead. Right. So it happens all the time. So many things that I've spent 6 months to a year slaving over and perfecting ends up getting seen by 20 people max and just dies. So I have all of these projects, so many different things, so many different stories in my head that I can repurpose, that I can turn into novels. And I absolutely love that about that. That said, I'm in love with Malcolm Chaucer. Malcolm Chaucer is my baby right now. He's for people that have not read the book yet, he is a deeply flawed protagonist. He's an interrogator. He's the world's best interrogator. He is the person that can read the tiniest micro expressions on your face and know whether or not you're telling a truth or a lie. And that's the reason that the CIA had him as their number one interrogator for so long. And now he's independent. The reason he's so good at this is because he suffers from extreme PTSD. He was tortured for 8 years in North Korea. And one of the hallmarks of PTSD is hypervigilance. The danger tripwire in the brain is turned on permanently and you can't really turn it off. And your body is responding to every stimuli around you. And because of that, it's what gives him his superpower. It also debilitates him. It also makes it extremely hard. I had experience with this because I wrote The Reaper for NBC. It was one of those crushing projects that didn't go, but it's based on the life of Nick Irving, a Army Ranger and the most successful Army sniper in U.S. history, and a single 100-day deployment in Afghanistan during the surge of 2009. He had 30-some-odd confirmed kills in a 100-day deployment. It was astonishing numbers. And getting to know him, talking to him, spending some time with him in Texas, I got to see a man that was living a very full and amazing life, an incredible person, but who was also suffering from some PTSD. And his ability to talk to me about that and describe what that was like. That a lot of Nick Irving is in Malcolm Chaucer. And I just thought that that's such an interesting character that I haven't seen before. I haven't seen anybody quite do that. You know, I've seen Sherlock, the British TV series, where basically they say, what if Sherlock was in present day and he's basically autistic, right? He has a very high functioning autism, and that's what makes him so special. Or the Agatha Christie movies that are coming out right now with Kenneth Branagh, right? He's got OCD. OCD is what makes Hercule Poirot so good at what he does. And I thought, why not take the experience of a serviceman with PTSD and turn that into a character, just move it into the CIA and have that character be indelible, hopefully.
Wow. That's strong stuff. That's really strong stuff. Well, there, folks out there, there you have it. There are a lot of strong characters out there, you know, Mark Greene, Brad Thor, Brad Taylor, they're all running strong characters, but you come at it from a different angle. You've got that personal experience with someone in the real world, but you've got this Hollywood storytelling piece that you lay over it, I think could be a fantastic combination. People are going to love this book. And I know people are busy. They've got a lot going on. Can we audiobook this thing too?
Yeah, I'm going to be putting it, that's on my list of things to do. Nice. I got foreign translations and audiobook are the next two things up for that. What I want to do is I want to get the second book out first, because I want to have, what I don't want is I don't want people to listen to the audiobook and then be ready for the next one and it's not even there. I want people to begin to be able to binge this stuff. So you're
the follow-ups.
Yep.
There you go.
Year of the Horse is going to be coming out this summer, hopefully early summer, hopefully end of May or even June. It'll depend on my editor once I get her the manuscript, which should be coming in the next few weeks. Hopefully we'll turn that around real quick.
And you have a free novella out there for people, right?
Yes, that also is not done yet, but there was a family issue for the editor who was working on that one. That's hopefully going to be resolved fairly quickly. And if you get Year of the Rabbit, you can sign up to my reader group and you will get a free novella, which is Year of the Sheep, which is a prequel. It's basically about the day Malcolm Chaucer walked across the border and out of North Korea and whole story and what happened.
Pierce Brosnan did that a while ago, too.
Yeah, he did that. Tomorrow Never Dies, I believe.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Was that the one, or was it GoldenEye? I don't remember. But one of the Pierce Brosnan Bonds did that.
Yeah. Was cool. Awesome. Hey, what do you want to tell all the aspiring writers out there, or even those with a few years under their belts, about moving their career next to the next level? You've seen it all. So what advice do you have?
I mean, so I would say this. I would say that a common misconception about screenwriters is that we're all about plot and we're all about, you know, the story and the plot and the structure. And yes, that's very important. But I found that for screenwriters, what we have figured out is that character is the key. Plot is what we get fascinated by. Theme is something that can touch us and affect us differently and make us see the world differently. Character is what we fall in love with. And in screenwriting especially, character is super important, because the first thing we want to do when we have a hot script on our hands is we want to find an actor. We want to find the Angelina Jolie. We want to find the Benedict Cumberbatch, the Matthew McConaughey to play that role. And guess what? They're getting bombarded by 30 scripts a month that's what makes the filter that the agent has before they send it to them. And what is going to make them want to do my script as opposed to the other 29 that are on the pile for them? And the answer is a indelible character, a character that they have never seen before, that has psychology, that has depth, that has care given. You know, you always say that when you want to create a great lead character, that character has to be somebody that we like, or somebody that we identify with, or somebody that we're fascinated by. One of those three. And to create a really great character, I don't think you want to do one of those. I think you want to do all three. I think you want to do a character that I like this person, right? Second chapter of the book, Malcolm Chaucer is on a subway and can tell that the woman sitting across from him is in an abusive relationship. And he does something about that, right? That's how we know we like him. how we know we're fascinated by him is the exactly what I was talking about his PTSD, right? And how he navigates the world with this, what would for some people would be a hospitalizing condition. How does he get through life that way? I would say that. I would say focus on character. Find what it is about your lead character and basically all the characters in your story. Why are they in this story? And what is it about them that intrigues you and draws you in? And if you can communicate that to an audience, guess what? You're going to have success because people are going to love that person the way you love that person, and they're going to want to follow that.
Well, Tom, we want to follow you. We like you, and we're fascinated by what you've got going on, and we can't wait to see more and more things come out and just watch the rest of your career explode. So I got a last segment here. I've got rapid fire. So just tell me, pick A or B, whichever one comes first to your head. Rapid fire questions start with Star Wars or Star Trek?
Wars. Star Wars. I would rather live in Trek, but I'd rather watch Wars.
Favorite A-team character? Hannibal.
Murdoch. No question
Face,
about it.
Howling Mad Murdoch or B.A. Baracus?
Howling okay. Mad Murdoch all day, every day.
Okay. Along with the Stephen J. Cannell theme, what is his best? Hunter, Wise Guy, The Commish, the aforementioned A-Team, Adam 12, The Rockford Files, or the show that we know here at the Dossier that you still have on VHS, Silk Stockings?
That's an easy one for me. Rockford Files is one of the best shows that so many people have not seen. If you want to see James Garner, who is an astonishingly good actor, at the absolute top of his game, playing a down and out PI that is just has to survive by his wits. It's an astonishingly great series. So due for love that it never quite got. Absolutely.
Agreed. There's no question. James Garner, it's a side note. I had the chance to be an extra in the movie The Notebook, and he's phenomenal. Such a good man. But
awesome.
Anyways, that's it. Tom, thank you for joining us. People can follow you on social media. You're all over the place, and they can follow you and sign up at tdonnelly.com. We're going to have all the contact information in the show notes and for an in-depth interview on this amazing screenwriter turned novelist, T.D. Donnelly. You can find his unclassified, unredacted dossier at thewritersdossier.com. Tom, anything else?
Nope. Just You're the Rabbit, available on Amazon. And I look forward to seeing you in New Orleans at BoucherCon.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
We had a lot of fun last year, and I hope everyone who's listening, who goes, turns in that Anthony Award ballot and puts your name right on there for War, You're the Rabbit. Tom, thanks for joining us. You bet.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Dossier Podcast. Remember, be good, be safe out there, and here is your official Dossier Safety Brief. Don't subtract from the population. Don't add to the population, unless you're trying. Stay out of the hospital, the newspaper, and jail. If you end up in jail, establish dominance quickly. The Dossier Podcast is a production of The Idea Academy.